The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You're listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Ski. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, hello and greetings to one and all. My name is Tony Lightfoot. Here we are with the TWBC podcast, latest episode, and glad to have you on board. I'm also glad to have on board as we continue on our season summaries from some of our top competitors on the Water Ski Pro Tour. We have Corey Vaughan, who comes to us out of Virginia. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, good, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Good. So, it's been quite a season, hasn't it? I mean, in every sense of the word, unique in the annals of water ski history.
Yeah, I mean, indeed. Now we're coming to the last event. It feels like it's been a full, long arc of a season. I've got to be honest. I'm not disappointed that we are wrapping up here right at the end of September. It would be quite a push to keep it all going through the month of October. I think with the Worlds taking place in August when they did, that's just a huge emotional and energetic output. So I think this is a very nice wrap up to the season. We've just come off the Mastercraft Pro and we've got one left.
Okay. All right, then. So let's start with the start. Okay, so your first tournament of the season.
Yeah, first tournament, Swiss Pro, right here where we are right now. Came down basically out of the rainy, cold Virginia April, where I was trying to get my game to be ready for pro competition. And, I was coming off of the best season of my life and wanted to keep that train rolling. And then Swiss Pro was a promising start for me this year. I ended up with a second place and some pretty consistent skiing over the weekend. And I thought, okay, here we go. We're off to the races.
Okay, so did anything much change about your training coming into this season? You know, I mean, you're not adverse to trying little tweaks or little changes between one season and the other. So was it the same, or did you try something a little different?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I wanted to tamper with the recipe very much at the end of last year. I mean, one thing that I did do was not give myself really any break time. I was kind of at the end of last year skiing very well. I was like, hey, I'm in a body that's working and skiing well. Let's maintain that, try to build up some strength over the winter. So, I mean, I have a long off season of not being on the water. So I was in the gym hard, which is kind of my typical winter program. And then we basically start the season April 1st. And so I knew I had about 1 month, so I wasn't changing any ski stuff or anything like that. I was just trying to remember how to do it all and get the reps in during April to be ready to go. I think Swiss Pro was May 4th. So it was basically 1 month of training and then straight into competition.
Oh, you're good with the dates. That was exactly the date, May the 4th. So did you do much with the skiing in the off season? No, because you ride the KD Element, the CV edition, Corey Vaughan edition, obviously. So did you make any tweaks to that, or did you?
Basically, we made a new production run. We didn't make any design changes. There were not to be any new features or anything like that. We had our flex pattern that we wanted to hit. The only thing I can say about it was that for whatever reason in the manufacturing, the most recent batch of skis just came out the best. I mean, they were, as far as we can scientifically measure skis, the same as what we had produced in the prior year. But after testing a few of them, I was like, well, I don't know what the sauce is, but these ones have it. Like, they just came out a little bit better. So love it when that happens.
You know, sometimes it's like a wine, you know, sometimes you really hit it off. You know, have you ever seen the movie Bottle Shock?
I did not.
No, there's a movie called Bottle Shock that has, I think, Bill Pullman and Alan Rickman. It was about the some California wine that that managed to gain their world attention, like Montelena, the wine was.
I think we would call that a digression, Tony. Let's go back to skiing now.
A little bit, but I'm just trying to.
The KD is like a fine wine, very fine wine. Everyone, you heard it here.
Indeed. So let's go back to skiing, shall we? The Swiss Pro. How'd you get on there?
Yeah. So it's always the first competition of the year. You have a certain set of nerves that pop back up, and then for me, always kind of traveling out of the cold, coming into somewhere warm. I always kind of wonder how the skiing's going to translate. But in my case, it translated well. It felt nicer skiing here in the warm water. And yeah, I was pretty consistent over the weekend. I had I think 3 at 41, then a 3.5, and then a 3 in the finals, which landed me second on the strength of the backup score. The 3.5 was able to separate me just enough for the silver there.
So, transitioning from the cold waters of Virginia to Florida, I mean, you've probably done it more than most, you know. So, what would you say are the major things that you kind of had to key in as you went from Bumpus, Virginia to right here in Claremont?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm always optimistic that it's going to feel good. I mean, skiing, the water here was probably 85, and the water that I left was probably, you know, 69 or something like that. And so you always want to ski in 85 degree water versus 69, but it's always hard to trust, like, how much better is that going to feel? And I was relieved to find that when I got here, I was like, okay, yeah, this does feel much better. The ski just moves through it nicely. You finish the turn better. As you come off of the wakes and the ski moves out, you kind of swing up on the boat. It feels like you swing into more space. So those are things that you're always looking to feel, and that were hard to come by at home, and was making me question if I'm doing everything right. So it was nice to come down here and then feel like, oh, okay, I'm doing things mainly the way I'm supposed to at home. Just the cold water is harder to ski on, and this feels better.
All right, then. So moving on to the next tournament. The next tournament after that was actually a pair of tournaments, wasn't it? The Masters qualifier.
Okay, yeah, we're going to cover the Masters. Yeah, I guess there was actually one before and one after. So those were heartbreakers for me. I skied in both of them. And in the first one, there was only one person who was to qualify. And so you had to win the event, which I nearly did. I was going from 3 to 4 at 41 off, and I took the nastiest tip drop out the front fall off the second wake that I have, you know, definitely my biggest fall of the season, biggest fall in probably a number of seasons. And so I didn't get to that 4 ball. So I ended up in a runoff. It was a 3-way runoff with T-Gas and Joel Poland. And I scored 2 at 41 in the runoff, Joel Poland 1 at 41, and T-Gas 3. So he won T-Gas and he went to the Masters. So then I tried again in the next Masters qualifier, on which there were going to be 2 people qualifying. Dane Meckler went out and ran 4 at 41, got the top spot of the day, good on him. And then I tied with Freddie Winter, to both of us got 3 at 41. So I thought, okay, here I am in a runoff again for the spot. We went out there, both ran the cold 39s. I was out first. I had a decent one, not so great of a 2, pulled long to 3, tried to sneak around it, and ended up, they did a video review and ended up just being 2. And then Freddie had, I think, maybe not so good of a 1, but then a good 2, pulled long, snuck the ski around it, and got 2.5 and qualified for the Masters and then won. So I was happy for him that he did that, but I was also feeling like that was my spot. So, a little bit of a heartbreaker there, being so close and still denied.
I'm sure you've got opinions as to the whole format of the Masters qualifier, you know, I mean, because in some previous years, you know, if you had the season that you kind of had the previous season, that would have been enough.
Yeah, that's safe to say. I don't know that we need to go deep into the weeds about what the Masters qualification should be. That's not my place to say, I guess. But I would say, based on the merits of my prior season, however you looked at it, winning an event, finishing fourth on the Pro Tour and being third in the world rankings, any number of those things would feel like, okay, this is a skier you probably want to have at the Masters, but apparently no. Nope.
All right, then. So after that point, your next tournament was...
Monaco for me.
Monaco, over in France, you know, over at Roquebrune, Serrat Jean, you know, Amina, whole bunch of the world's top slalomers were there on site, you know. So what was your kind of mindset? What was your headspace with that one?
I mean, at that point in the season, I was doing the best skiing that I ever had in my life. So I was ready to go over there. You know, I had the second at Swiss. I wanted to do something along those lines again. Felt like, this was going to be a promising outing for me. And it didn't work out that way. I don't really know. I ran really nice 39s both rounds. The one round I came up with a half at 41, which was strange because I almost never fall at one ball and I had a really good gait. So that was disappointing. Then in the next round, I had an amazing one ball at 41. And then an absolutely atrocious two ball, which I can't explain. And I pulled all the way to three and got a quarter. And that was not good enough to really do anything there. So that was a letdown. Like in the practice the day before the tournament, I was running four at 41. The practice the day after the tournament, I ran five at 41. Not sure what happened in the middle there, but it wasn't what I wanted.
But there you go. So you moved on for that tournament, Morocco, brand new, not a brand new country, but a brand new site within that country over in Rabat. So I mean, I'm sure that you have one or two feelings, one or two comments about skiing on a tidal river.
Yeah, well, and it was a new country for me. I hadn't made it the previous year when it was in Marrakesh, so I was excited about it. I have skied at Moomba a number of times, which I thought would be the closest proxy, you know, a tidal river, and I like my chances generally in rougher conditions. So I had good feelings about it. I thought I kind of chalked Monaco up to bad luck, and then I was ready to do some damage in Morocco, which I almost did. I did some really good damage in the first preliminary round. I ran a two at 41.
No one was running 39 at that point.
Yeah, right. It was, so I felt great about that. I guess it still stands as the course record, and I got to hold the lead for 2 days through the qualifying. But that was the wrong round to get that score. In the finals, again, just didn't bounce my way. I was using the same strategy. I felt good. I was ready to try to go produce the same score and ski for the win. But instead, I went down at three ball at 38. Like, I wasn't even in bad shape. I wasn't thinking that was about to happen. It just happened. And so that was disappointing also.
So aside from the skiing there at in Morocco in the city of Rabat, what were your major takeaways from that event? Because I mean, it was just a killer sight, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that was a one of a kind event, and I'm so thankful that I was there. Yes, disappointed in the skiing, but also thankful to have been a part of the whole thing. I mean, between being treated so well as an athlete, having the accommodations paid, the food, we were treated to a very elaborate dinner on one of the nights. We were treated to a big drone display, you know, lighting up the sky one of the nights, and you know, just being able to be kind of like poolside watching the event go on. You know, it was a very comfortable and unique pro event, and yeah, I'm very thankful to have been there.
Okay, so moving on from Morocco, next tournament was going to be...
Yeah, I did jet out for the California Pro-Am and got to ski out there. That was another one where skied decently enough to make the finals, ran a 3 at 41 in the prelims, felt excited for the finals, and then kind of laid an egg. We'll just keep it nice and simple there. Didn't come home with anything that I wanted out of that one. So, you know, and all of this against the backdrop of I really feel like my skiing was as dialed in as ever and practicing as well as
ever. You were
ever.
Getting the scores, but not the result.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, just kind of day in, day out in practice, feeling focused and you know, like on my game. So, yeah, I've been waiting for that to translate. I guess the next opportunity was the World Championships. And I guess that's the one that, you know, where I really, really was hoping for it to translate, because that's a crown jewel in the sport right there.
Yeah, but you also got to ski in the Nationals, didn't you?
No, didn't go to the Nationals. It was too much travel. So I just, after California Pro-Am, I started just kind of getting my mind fixed on the World Championships, and that was in my crosshairs.
Yeah, I mean, because that was an experience an extended period of time, like almost a month, wasn't it, between California Pro. I mean, from my perspective, after around about the time of that event was the World U21s European Championships, European Under 21s, 3 week span, and I think you had another week on top of that. That was a full month between like California Pro and that.
That might be right, but you know, when you've been traveling, you know, out of the country and across the country already, then a month of time at home doesn't feel very long to, you know, just kind of get into a routine. I went over to the Worlds about a week early. So, yeah, maybe there were about 3 weeks there between California and taking off for Italy. Kind of just enough time to feel like I was in some normal home routine temporarily before shoving off again.
Okay, so who was holding down the fort when you're out over in these places over in Bumpus?
Yeah, so I had a great crew all through this season, and I mean, including now, I'm down to only one member on staff, and that's AJ Quimper. He's running ski school today before he actually comes down for the Travers Grand Prix this weekend, and we'll have to be closed for a couple of days. But AJ was on board all summer. I had Bradley Gibbons from Canada.
Yeah, I know him.
Yeah, he was. He does a great job. He now is in dental school, so I lost him to higher education. And then another friend, Robbie Craig, he's a student at Rollins and is on their ski team. So I lost him also at the start of the school year. But kind of through the thick of it there, our really busy months, June, July, I had that whole crew there. And then August and September also busy, even as we whittled down. But I had, you know, Chris Parrish came in for the week when I was at the World Championships. So that that was a fun, special thing to offer to everybody that skis in Bumpus. I had a lot of, you know, people said great things about Chris. A lot of people were just excited to meet him and ski with him and wanted to take him out to dinner and things like that. So,
I remember the Global Watch Party photo that was during the World Championships, and that was actually a lot of that was your idea.
Well, yeah, like I'd like to see that watch party thing take off and see people get super creative with it. I think in time, you know, my goal would be that we'd have like a watch party sponsor, and whoever has the coolest watch party based on, I don't know, either votes or just you, Tony, you just pick it out. This was the coolest one. They get the prize pack, and I don't know, they get some cool little swag package or something like that.
Maybe that's something to maybe focus in on the future alongside the audience prize and the skier of the day and everything. So, okay. So we've delayed this long enough. World Championships.
World Championships, man, I...
Was that your first time into Italy?
No, I've been over there a number of times for the San Gervasio Pro-Am.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. You didn't go this year, but...
Right, but that's where I trained before the Worlds. I got in touch with Matteo, and he said he'd have a ski nautique there, so I trained for, you know, like 4 days or something like that in San Gervasio to get prepared, and... you know, I had some very high hopes and expectations about Worlds. At the same time, you know, everybody is going to be there skiing lights out. And of course, you know, we did see that, you know, that preliminary round was intense.
Insane, wasn't it? And what was it? 9 threes and 3 fours?
Exactly. 9 people ran 3 at 41, 3 people ran 4. And that just shows you, there's no margin for error. You can't slip up. And there were many great skiers who weren't able to go through and advance to the finals because, you know, 2.5 didn't get there. 2 didn't get there.
Turn a quarter, didn't get there with Joel Poland.
Right, that's right. So you know it's going to be something like that going in, and the pressure and the nerves that that creates are extremely intense because our sport can be fickle, and it's you could easily make one mistake somewhere along the way, and you just really don't want it to happen on that day.
Okay, so when... Before we actually go in deep into the weeds in the event in terms of how you skied, kind of give the folks an idea of what it's like to ski well to actually be a part of that environment of the World Championships. You know, because you see a number of competitors that you don't ordinarily see in the season. You see a number of competitors that you know that come from far away places. You know, that are representing their country. You know, And I mean, you kind of have to deal a little bit with like the fame and the adulation of all of those skiers coming up to you and shaking your hand, you know. And
I see what you're saying. Yes, because I was going to say, like in the men's slalom, like the top contenders are people that I would see along the way. But then you're right that you know, you've got a deep field in all three events, men's and women's. I would say that I'm not sure that I can cop to having to deal with fame and adulation too much. That wasn't a primary concern for me. In general, I laid pretty low. I didn't want to be sitting out on the site and, you know, kind of I couldn't help myself from stewing in the momentous occasion that was about to come, but I felt like putting myself at the site was just going to ramp that up even more. So I tried to keep a little bit of space and keep my own, you know, head on balance. But yeah, certainly, you know, showing up there for practice or for the prelims, it's just the amount of physical bodies that are there. And you're right, people you're bumping into, stopping you for sidebar conversations,
selfies.
Yes, that's true. It all does happen, and you want to be friendly, and you want to make connections with people that you don't get to see very often. So there is, you know, just adds to the gravitas of the whole event. There's no question about it.
Okay, so going into the finals.
Going into the finals, you know, the nine people that ran three were given a random draw in the order that they went out, and I was towards the later end.
What was the vibe on that on the dock with all of these nine skiers, you know? I mean, like, Freddie was off the dock first.
Yeah.
I mean, he's never been off the dock first for as long as I can remember.
Yeah. You know, Charlie Ross was disappointed about it because he felt that he should have been top seed based on his ranking coming in and being he ran four. And so he went and spoke with the chief judge. I was there, and she just kind of pointed the rule. I guess that's the way it always is at Worlds, and it's different than what we're used to on the Pro Tour, so I think that's why it didn't square, but I guess that's the way that it always is at Worlds, and there's really, if it's written clearly in the rule book, there's not a whole lot you can say about it. That's just what you do. And
do you think it should be changed?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because, I mean, people are always a little bit hesitant into allowing an outside factor to determine the seedings going into a final.
That's right. And to me, an outside factor would be what your ranking or whatever is. Basically, if all these people skied equally on the day of the competition, treating them as equals means making a random draw. And so in a way, that seems very fair.
Yes, very devil's advocate of you.
Well, I mean, the alternative is, you know, if you have a higher ranking, that may also mean that you just live somewhere where you're able to ski a lot more record tournaments and you have a lot more opportunities to push your score up. So that doesn't mean that you should have a higher seeding. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're a better skier. It just means that, you know, you might have run the same score as this other person on average, but because you went to three times as many record tournaments, you know, the odds are on one of them you're going to have put up a bigger than average score, and that shouldn't necessarily have bearing on your performance in a world title event. So, you know, I can see it both ways. I don't have super strong feelings about it. It struck me as a surprise that it was going to be random. I would have been perfectly fine if it was based on the seeding. But I don't have like, oh, we must change it, or, you know, no, it must stay the same way. I feel pretty neutral about that.
Okay, so let's continue on into the final round. We kind of got a little bit sidetracked on there, because but the point was raised with the seedings.
Right. Final round. You know, I got to see however many it was, maybe seven or so skiers before me, something like that. Will had already run 5 at 41 early on. Nate had already run 41 by the time that I skied and put up 1 at 43, which was okay. Not a huge surprise. I think we were kind of expecting that if you wanted to win or be on the podium, kind of run 41 is what's in your mind for that event. So that's what I wanted to do. And, you know, I can think back to the moment there where I was dropped at the end of the lake, coming, getting ready to come in at 41, and I was in a good headspace. I don't second guess my mindset, my preparation, you know, kind of the little bit of the keys that I wanted to flash through my mind, and how much I also didn't want to overly think it, just trust that I could perform. So I was in the right spot there, but it's a razor-thin margin between getting the gate and one ball at 41 that you need to run it and getting the gate and one ball at 41 that often results in something like a 3. And in my case, I got the latter. You know, I was in pretty good shape off of 1. Not bad, but not great. I needed a really, really good 2 ball to kind of reset the line and put me on a path to go deep down the pass. And I didn't come up with it. You know, when I came off of 2, and as I'm going across the lake assessing where I am, it became pretty clear that I was not going to be running that pass, and that my odds of turning that buoy and getting over to 4 were exceedingly low. And so I ended up with the full 3. And that turned out to be good enough for tied 7th place, which is not what I had drawn up and hoped for. No. In my mind. I think basically, you know, there were 10 slalom skiers in that field that wanted to do what Charlie Ross did, which was go out there, run 41, tie Nate, and end up in a runoff. You know, that's
yeah. So
Charlie Ross did it.
Indeed. And Nate eventually won the world championship in that runoff, but via that runoff.
Yes, right.
And so beyond the world championships, your next event was going to be Mastercraft, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. Mastercraft Pro, you know, came back home. I had a wedding to attend, which was a nice little getaway, change up the pace and have a nice time with my wife, a little mini vacation.
Speaking of, I mean, she was obviously watching the webcasts and everything, you know. But I mean, it must have been pretty, you know, pretty exhausting. Or, you know, how best to phrase it? You know, you're here, she's at home, keeping everything rolling, you know. So I mean, the situation for her couldn't have been.
Oh yes, I mean, thanks for bringing that up. There's no, we're not doing a Joe Rogan length podcast here where I can expound all of my gratitude for how much my wife Amelia has supported me, not just at the World Championships or any one particular place. I mean, we're talking about for years, day in, day out, and there's been plenty of sacrifice on her part. So thanks for putting a pin in that and giving me the opportunity to say so.
Sure.
But yeah, it's always thanks to her that I'm out here.
Of course, you know, I mean, it takes a village, doesn't it?
Yep. No, that's 100% right. It's her, you know, being kind of the number one, the, you know, foundation in kind of everything that's going on in my life, and then, you know, the other guys I mentioned, you know, helping to run ski school and the village beyond that, the people that are coming out to ski school and so on. It certainly does. I'm very thankful for the whole community.
All right, then, another distraction from another tournament to Mastercraft. Let's go.
Yeah, Mastercraft Pro. Very happy to be coming, you know, to a site that I know that I like and skiing on, you know, my normal training boat. I feel like I'm always switching boats, you know, when it comes time for tournaments. So I always love the Mastercraft Pro to go with what I'm used to. And, It felt great out there. Isles of Lake Hancock, that place skis fantastic. You know, I ran a 41 there last year, so I wanted to do something of the kind. First round, I ran a 4. It was feeling pretty good. And second round, I also had a really good start. I went for the big turn at 3 to set up the full pass. Didn't come away with it, but that's okay. And then in the finals, I don't know. Like, I just didn't feel as on my game on any of the passes. Like, all the way from I opened with 12 meters, 35 off, and that one felt like not quite as great as I hoped. And same with the 38. Like, I don't know why I didn't quite settle in. I was trying to make small adaptations to find that magic sauce. But, you know, in the finals, it turned out all I could muster was 3 at 41. It was my worst start at 41 of the tournament. And that ended up with a tie for 4th. So just off the podium, which is always a little bit of a heartbreaker. You like to be on the podium, not off the podium. Yeah.
Of course. So with Mastercraft done, I mean, your next tournament's not this one coming up. You've got the Travers Pro.
Yeah, Travers Grand Prix. That's the end of the line for me and probably a lot of other people. Like, I won't be skiing any, you know, records deep into the spring or anything like that. After the Travers Grand Prix, I'll be going back home and probably then shifting gears, doing some R&D work on KD skis and some things like that, continue running ski school. But in my mind, you know, we're going to see how this shakes out, but I don't mind, you know, saying so while we're sitting here now. This season, day in, day out, I've done my best and most consistent skiing, you know, in my life, and I've just not matched that with results at a tournament. I mean, sometimes I need to ski better, just straight up need to ski better at the tournament. Sometimes I need to ski better just right when it counts, like in the finals. And I think in some part I've had some bad luck here and there, but I'm hoping with one more chance here at Travers to do something to end the season on a high note and, you know, walk away with some satisfaction.
Okay. You alluded to something just a few moments ago, like saying that it was going to be it. And you had mentioned in the past that you wanted to take a step back from the Pro Tour or the intensity of going week after week away from your family and all of that kind of stuff. Do you still feel the same way now?
Yeah, well, I don't know that I ever wanted to. It depends on how you say it. I love getting to do these events, and it would be really lovely if it were easy or convenient or super lucrative to travel all around the world and do these. But yeah, my life situation is such that it's becoming, you know, my wife and I have a baby on the way due in February, so we're going to have...
Oh, congrats.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we'll have a second child, which will make for a busier house, and especially a newborn. Those are some busy times. So, you know, I know what it took me this April in order to get ready to be skiing at my best by the time of the Swiss Pro and the LCQs. I don't foresee being able to do that, live that way. With a baby in the house for sure. So, you know, I think some of that spring stuff next year, I don't think I'll be able to be there. Going off to Europe in the middle of the summer, leaving my wife at home with a 5-month-old, I don't think so. So, you know, it's just kind of being reasonable. I'm hoping that, you know, just like right now, we've got some events in the fall here domestically in the U.S. that I'll have a season of skiing under my belt and it's easier to travel to and not as disruptive. And the baby's a little older. We've got our routine down and that I can, you know, come participate and give it, you know, my best shot. But I'm just trying to temper my own expectations and make sure that I don't drive myself crazy trying to pursue this in the same fashion that I'm doing now, because it really is just untenable with the greater circumstance of my life. So where it goes beyond 2026, I think, is a broader question. I mean, I turned 40 years old in 10 days. So,
oh wow,
it's not that, you know, I have the next 10 years to think about exactly as terms of improving my craft. So, you know, I love skiing. I'll continue skiing when I can. I will certainly want to come and be a part of all the good things about the Pro Tour and professional water skiing. But my approach and my commitment to being there and to training to be there and planning my whole life around events and training for events is going to take a change here after this event at Travers. Yes.
I mean, you're always a popular skier on the Water Ski Pro Tour. Everyone seems to have a handshake, a nice, firm, crisp handshake, or waiting for you, you know, whenever you meet up with some of your fans, you know. And I mean, in the live chats, you know, on the webcast on TWBC, it fills up an entire page when you, I mean, that's got to be satisfying, right?
Oh, I mean, certainly. I know I hear you say it when I go back to watch my skiing and try to see what I'm doing out there. And I mean, I'm thankful to all those people for their support and for caring enough about the sport to tune in and for caring enough about me to tune in. You know, I feel like I'm somebody who is kind of on the ground at a grassroots level, interacting with a lot of skiers and basically just trying to share this passion for the sport that runs very deep through my veins. And most people that do this sport, I just get the opportunity, you know, vis-a-vis ski school and traveling around to places to interact with these folks and build a big community. And, you know, yes, it does, even if things don't go well, it does buoy my heart a little bit to have some people in there, you know, giving me the slap on the back and saying, hey, go get it or get it next time.
All right, then. We'll wind this down a little bit here for this edition of the TWBC podcast. Any parting words?
Oh, gosh. Well, yeah, this is kind of the end of an era for me, in a sense, as we just discussed. I'm kind of turning the page to a new chapter after this Travers Grand Prix event. I'm not trying to put any additional pressure on myself about the event because it's that way, but it sure would be special to go ahead and put one together here and have a nice showing out there at Travers. So it's a great place to ski. And I'm looking forward to it, and I hope to see you there in the booth. We'll have some fun.
Indeed, indeed, we will. And that concludes this edition of the TWBC podcast. I'm Tony Lightfoot with Corey Vaughn. And until next time, it is ciao for now. Best views of the guests on this podcast.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.